Chapter 12. Hondo left him a welcome back card. It is, of course, absolutely hideous, gaudy and obnoxious and covered in glitter that gets into far too many inconvenient places, similar to the pirate himself. Hondo left it where it would be most visible, too, propped up against the controls of the Bacta tank where it's impossible not to see. Dr. Tolari has pointedly left it entirely alone, so it's still waiting for Granta when he slips into the medical wing in the early hours of the morning, unable to sleep despite the doctor's rounds of treatment. Droid Bay is floating in the tank, still, limp, the oxygen mask hiding most of his face and his wounds all too obvious. Granta looks at the card when he can't bear to look at Droid Bay any longer, and wonders what would have happened if he had been an hour earlier to arrive. The pale glow of the tank fills the room, and he can't find any answers, no matter how long he stares. After several long hours, the inaction leaves Granta feeling a little mad, and he slips out again, a knot in his chest and in his head in equal measure, and goes to get some work done. Outside the windows of the complex, the towering trees loom, 100 meters tall and casting thick shadows across the whole moon. Rune's rings spread across the sky behind them, glowing brightly, the day side of the planet still wholly lit by the blue-white sun. The moon, at least, has night, soft beneath the trees, and Granta finds a wide window with a view of the trees and sky and settles in, propping Hondo's card against the transparasteel as he works through messages and rumors. A surprising number of his old contacts are still out of prison or the grave, which is an unlooked-for stroke of good luck. Granta's disappearance doesn't precisely help matters, but at least he was largely between plans when Dooku took him, didn't leave too many people stranded mid-plot. Several of the smaller deals he made have unexpectedly borne fruit, too, and Granta makes sure to be particularly polite and apologetic for his absence when he reaches out to those groups. Some organizations have fallen apart completely, but it seems like the Hutts are expanding their power, and Granta files those losses away to contemplate later. He isn't scared of the Hutts by any means, because their power is deeply entrenched and stagnant at this point, and weak in the Republic itself, but they're still a force. He can make deals with them if it comes to that, but he'd rather not. Slowly, carefully, he pulls at threads, checks connections, gathers information. The senators he invested in once are largely still interested in cooperation, particularly if they get something out of it. And Granta pulls together funds, offers generous donations in return for favors, makes lists. The sheer volume of corruption in the Republic Senate is highly amusing, and highly useful, and the Confederacy's Senate is little better. Worse, in many ways, because the trade and commerce guilds hold far more power than the senators, and Dooku sits at the top of the pyramid, a fat old toad with far too much wealth and influence, gobbling up all potential competitors. That can't be allowed to stand, Granta thinks, with a thin smile, and spins a few rumors, sets a few old spies into motion, and wakes the vast, sleeping giant of his old network, turning the main force of it against Dooku, like tossing a rock down an avalanche-prone slope. Dooku is a Sith, but he's just one man. His family is wealthy, but Serenno is just one planet. At the height of Granta's power, he controlled whole systems from the shadows, and he's been gone for almost 8 years, but memories of power are slow to fade. People remember, and that's useful. It's incredible how delicate command structures can be once they're laid bare, like vast engines with too many moving parts. Granta just needs to introduce a few problems, jostle some gears, and the whole thing will fall apart. Hondo replies to his thanks for the BACTA as he's filing paperwork with the planetary government to get one of his mostly legal shipping companies granted access to several new CIS ports, close enough to the established capital that it will be easy to slip a few spies in. Granta pauses for a moment, assessing the response, and then snorts and answers the message, though he turns down the request for a holocall. Immediately after greetings are exchanged, without any attempt at small talk, Hondo asks, "So, what's this I hear about you looking for Django? Searching for trouble again?" Cocking his head, Granta leans back, considering his response. Hondo is very fond of Django, though Granta has never quite been able to work out if it's some sort of romantic connection they keep quiet, a friendship, or something that's entirely in Hondo's head. One of the perils of trying to get any information from Hondo at all. But Hondo might not take well to Granta being too aggressive. He's eminently practical and self-serving, but Hondo still has flashes of loyalty that are somewhere between admirable and unnerving, just unpredictable enough that Granta has no idea when they'll show themselves. If now is one of those moments, and Hondo decides to take umbrage at Granta gunning for Django, it could complicate quite a few things. Hondo might not call himself a pirate king, but in the Outer Rim, at least, that's entirely what he is. "Family matters," he finally answers. "Captain, I feel alone and abandoned with my children in this cold, ruthless world. Django at least owes me full custody of my beautiful sons, but the bastard vanished on me. Surely you can understand why I'm looking for him. I don't want much, just justice for my children." The answer comes almost instantly, the scroll of text filling the screen. It's effusive, dramatic, full of long sections about the tribulations of raising a child in the middle of a criminal empire, and a story about Hondo's mother and her bravery and steadfastness that somehow morphs midway through into a demand to meet said children as part of their family. Whether that means he's fucking Django regularly enough to consider himself their step-parent, or just that he's invested in giving himself titles, Granta can't tell, but he agrees with a mournful request for any word on Django. Hondo's instant agreement could mean he'll do it, or that he's going to turn around and sell Granta out to Django as soon as the transmission closes, but, well, Granta has contingencies for either outcome. He's in the middle of making a tally of all the aides he can potentially influence in the Confederacy's Senate when the door hisses open and quiet steps cross the room. Granta looks up and smiles at the sight of Jax, his hair flattened on one side and standing up in impressive poofs on the other, still wearing sleeping clothes and stumbling slightly. Without pause, Granta slides over on the window seat, raising an arm, and Jax immediately crawls up onto it, thumps down against Granta's side, and buries his face in Granta's shoulder with a groan. "Why are you awake?" he demands, muffled. "So early." Granta chuckles, attempting ineffectually to smooth down some of Jax's curls. "I've been gone for 7 years. All of my enterprises need a little love and care. Why are you awake?" Jax is quiet for a moment, then huffs. "I had a dream that the Kaminoans caught me and decommissioned me," he says, "for running away." It feels like taking a knife to the chest. Granta just breathes for a moment, stroking Jax's hair, then tips his head, pressing his forehead to Jax's skull. "Even if they did catch you," he says quietly, "I would burn the whole planet to ash and cinders before I let them hurt you, Jax. If anything ever happens, all you have to do is wait for me, and I'll come for you." Jax doesn't answer for a moment, but his fingers curl in the hem of Granta's shirt. He leans against Granta, quiet, and Granta wraps an arm more tightly around him and waits him out. Finally, quietly, Jax says, "I would have asked to come with you the minute you escaped, even if I'm not your son." "You are my son," Granta says, just as soft. "And I would have accepted in a heartbeat, Jax." Something in Jax eases at that, relaxes, and he resettles against Granta's side, no longer clinging quite so tightly, but also not moving away. Granta doesn't shift, doesn't go back to his work, just sits there, stroking his hair as the sky lightens. Eventually, Jax falls asleep like that, head pillowed on Granta's shoulder, and breaths soft against his collarbone. Like this, Granta feels like the world is very large and very small and very soft, all at the same time. His whole chest is tight, tangled up, and knotted. He never had moments like this with Tura. She started early and worked late, and what little free time they had was devoted to training, drills, tests. But he would have liked to, he thinks. Impossible to imagine Xanatos ever acting like this, but in a better world, Tura would have. Granta can imagine sitting with her somewhere bright, falling asleep against her side, and being able to do that for Jax. He's so glad Jax came. So desperately glad, in a way that aches right down to his soul. The sun is high and bright in the sky, lightening the forest shadows to a green glow, when there's a perfunctory knock on the door. It slides open a moment later, and Hunty crosses the dark stone on silent feet, a lean, dark, threatening form in the mid-morning light. There's a bandolier of thermal detonators across his chest, and his hair is just a little windswept. Come from checking on the edges of the property, Granta thinks, and lowers his pad, pleased. He'd hired Hunty to lead Kenobi and Skywalker to the holocron he planted, but it's good to know that the man is just as meticulous without careful instruction. Hunty's gaze flickers over Jax, then Granta, and an odd expression crosses his face. He doesn't comment, though, just nods, then pauses, like he can't figure out what to do with himself. Amused, Granta tips his head at the other end of the long window seat, watching as Hunty carefully settles himself. All quiet, he asks, low, but Jax doesn't stir. Hunty nods. No one should be able to find this place, he says, equally quiet. A contact in the local government is going to alert me if any ships requesting to land catch her attention, though. Good. Other matters are in order. Tipping his head, Hunty passes over a data chip, and Granta slides it into his pad, flipping through the pages that appear. The security assessment is right at the front, and after a quick scan, he turns back to it, frowning faintly. Inconvenient, he says after a moment. Hunty makes a sound of quiet agreement. Lure him out, he asks. Granta considers the matter. If things go right, the rest of my plans will be bait enough, he says, and skips to the next document. We'll focus on smaller targets for now, and leave the count for later. He studies the file, brow rising, and then smiles. Well, I do enjoy getting rid of competition. You want another bounty hunter for this one, even with my presence already? Hunty shifts faintly, uncomfortable. Another body would make it easier, he says. And I know someone who would be a good fit. He's worked with Sugi before, too. I know you're capable, but... Granta waves a hand, amused. Set up a meeting with him, then. I want this done as soon as possible. He's on the night side already, Hunty says with faint relief. I asked him to clear his schedule for the day. He can meet us whenever you're ready. Good, Granta says, pleased. He slides out one of the other chips he's been using, offering it to Hunty. These three are low-priority targets. It's up to you whether you want to take the bounties yourself or pass them on, but make sure they're dead by the end of the month regardless. Hunty takes the chips, checks the names, and nods. If the new hire works out, I'll take them, he says. Just Sugi for security is... Finish that sentence, Preg. I dare you, Sugi says, waving the door shut behind her. Hunty rolls his eyes, then sighs in exasperation when Sugi shoves him over to take up half the seat and crowd him against the window, but he moves, and Sugi sprawls in the cleared space, though her eyes are still faintly wary as she watches Granta appraisingly. Preg may have a point, Granta says mildly. If you're occupied getting Jax to safety, who will defend my poor helpless self? I'm just a rich businessman after all. Sugi pauses for a long moment, then drops her gaze to where Jax is still fast asleep against Granta's shoulder. You want to tell me that if someone invades, you won't focus every bit of your attention on getting that kid out? She asks, perfectly mild. Jax is well-trained. He can handle himself for long enough that I can take care of the threat, Granta counters, but help in doing so wouldn't go amiss. Sugi concedes the point with a snort. taking him to the night side, if he wants to come. Jax picks fights when he thinks someone's been wronged, stands up to bullies no matter what it costs him in terms of bruises and black eyes, but he's sensible overall. If he does decide to come, he'll stick close, and that's all Granta wants. Hunty tips his head in agreement. When? He asks. Granta considers it for a moment and, well, he and Jax both need clothes, since his are still covered in blood and Jax only has his uniform. A few more knives and a good blaster wouldn't go amiss on Rune's nightside either. Tell him noon and pick a decently sized cantina to meet in. I'll head down as soon as Jax wakes up. I'll go ahead too, Hunty says quietly. We can meet at the cantina. He won't double-cross us. Personal code. A liability, Granta thinks clinically, but not an insurmountable one if he's skilled enough to catch Hunty's eye. Good. Sugi, keep an eye on the house, the medical wing particularly. If the doctor needs anything. Sugi nods. I'll get it for her, she promises. Pereg and I set up comms if you want to take one. Granta considers for a moment. Comms can be tracked if there's a traitor, but then he's more than able to stay hidden if he needs to, and the need to know what's happening at the house outweighs the risks. All right, get one for me. For Jax as well. Yes, sir, Sugi says with lazy cheer, and pushes back to her feet, heading out the door with quick steps. Hunty watches her go for a moment, then slants a glance at Granta again, and hesitates. Yes, Granta asks pleasantly, just for the way it makes the wariness grow in Hunty's metallic violet eyes. Still, Hunty is a bounty hunter, and one of the best. He doesn't lack nerves. I took the liberty, he says quietly, and pulls a second datapad from his belt, unfolding it with a flick of his wrist. The screen shimmers to life, and after another second's hesitation, Hunty offers it up. Kenobi and Skywalker, last location. An emotion Granta can't quite name curls through him. He takes the pad, more careful than such a simple motion warrants, and scans the information with a clinical eye. No assigned battalions, and Skywalker is still a Padawan, albeit a senior one now. His temple record has a major demerit mark, though what precisely caused it isn't specified. Kenobi was briefly a High Council member, then stepped down at the start of the war, and a master named Aegon Kolar took his place. They were last on Toydaria, negotiating its neutral stance in the war, and from the record Hunty has compiled, they've been kept far back from the actual war. Interesting, Granta thinks, and flips through Skywalker's record. There's little of substance, though there is an intriguing mention of a senator requesting that Skywalker be barred from seeing her at any time. Someone to talk to once Granta makes it to Coruscant. He loves other people's problems. Hunty is still watching him, waiting for a reaction. Granta doesn't give it to him. He peruses a few more pages, makes a note of their next assignment, and then deftly closes the pad and hands it back. Keep an eye on them, he says. Hire a few extra eyes if it's needed, or go yourself if you'd like to really tug at Kenobi's heartstrings. I've no immediate need for updates, though. He watches the relief that slides through Hunty's face and smiles. Did your one interaction with Kenobi soften your heart to him that much, my friend? I've heard he is a charming bastard, but I'd thought you were heartless. Isn't that what all the rumors say? Hunty huffs, looking away. In the morning light, the slits of his gills are clear, and Granta thinks with a thread of sharp humor of the scene on the mountaintop. Hunty in the thermal spring with all the detonators on his bandolier about to blow, Kenobi desperate to save him as Hunty delivered Granta's scripted warning. Hunty's species, from a planet in wild space, is rare across the galaxy, and members of it making themselves visible is even rarer. There was little chance that Kenobi would have recognized what he was on sight, less chance that he would have known just how indestructible Hunty was. Granta wouldn't have been opposed to manipulating a bounty hunter into killing themselves to pass on his taunt, but tricking Kenobi was even better. He asked me to surrender, Hunty says after a long moment, so he could save me. Not many people would offer a bounty hunter that. Granta hums lightly, tamping down on the rage that stirs. Obi-Wan Kenobi was party to Xanatos' suicide, and he'd been close enough to hear Kenobi's words about Xanatos at the mountain peak. "I saw someone take his life in a pool like this. It was Xanatos, Qui-Gon's greatest enemy. A being who hated Qui-Gon and would stop at nothing to destroy him. Still, when he took his own life, Qui-Gon stopped to mourn his life's passing. I will never forget it." Bantha shit. It's all Bantha shit. Qui-Gon Jinn is the one who created Xanatos, who forced him to become what he did, and all the Jedi are culpable in what happened to him. To honor Qui-Gon just for mourning the Padawan he failed, the child he rejected and injured and cast aside, it's enough to make Granta sick. It's enough to make him laugh. "Obi-Wan Kenobi is a coward and a hypocrite," he says. "Perfectly steady, perfectly even. He and his master drove my father to his death. If you have any sense of self-preservation, you'll stay very far from him at all times." He sees Hunty tense and smiles thinly, raising a hand. "However, I have my sons to focus on and a network to rebuild. Whatever you choose to do, I trust it won't impact your employment in any way." Hunty shakes his head. "I keep my word," he says quietly. "If I approach him, it won't reveal anything about you or what happened before." Not the answer Granta wanted, but acceptable. He breathes out, careful, and glances down to find Jax watching him, golden brown eyes open and bleary. This time, the smile comes more easily. Granta runs a hand over his curls, leans in to press their foreheads together, and feels Jax's hand curl tighter in his shirt. "Good morning," he says softly. "Better dreams this time." Jax grunts, burying his face in Granta's shoulder, but nodding. There's a pause, and then he says, very distinctly, "I'm hungry." Granta snorts. With a clone's metabolism, he's absolutely certain that Jax is. Dinner was a long time ago, and not eating pure protein rations means Jax has to eat even more than normal. He's the biological equivalent of a 10-year-old, too, and Granta remembers how much he ate at that age. It had driven Tura close to despair, and Granta had learned to nick rations and supplies and full meals to keep himself full, instead of making her pay to feed him. Jax doesn't have to worry about that, though. Granta can give him anything and everything he could ever want, and he plans to. "I can have the droids in the kitchen prepare something simple," he says, "or if you're willing to wait an hour or so, we can have a much more interesting meal on Roon. There should be more food delivered today, but we arrived suddenly, and pickings are slim at the moment." Jax mulls it over for a moment. "I can wait," he says, and pushes up, scrubbing at his face. Granta just watches him, and it's that same feeling as before, that the world is at once vast and small enough to sleep against his side in the morning light. "Good," he says, quiet. "Shower and we'll leave. Parag will be meeting us later to interview another prospective employee." "Another bounty hunter?" Jax asks, unimpressed, and Granta snorts. "Bounty hunter sounds so much more polite than mercenary," he says lightly. Jax rolls his eyes, but glances outside, pauses. When Granta follows his gaze, he's looking up at the blue sky visible through the massive trees, and there's something strange on his face. "I've never slept this late before," he says, and his expression is almost unsettled. Impossible to forget that Jax is a clone soldier, in training since the moment he was decanted from the cloning vat. Granta breathes out, but he smiles, and says, "Well, it was a rather eventful day yesterday, surviving an invasion. And now you don't have to ever wake up at dawn unless you'd prefer to." There's a pause. Jax's attention slips away for a moment, but then he rolls his eyes again, rises to his feet. "Then why don't you ever sleep?" he asks. "I slept most of the way here," Granta points out, and when he catches Hunty starting to smile, he levels a warning look at him. "You were recuperating from being shot," Jax says, bland. "I don't think that counts." "It was sleep. There's no counting, because there's no difference." Granta gives him a prod in the shoulder. "Shower, then we leave. The night side should be quiet enough at this time." "We're going to the night side?" Jax perks up, and the oddness slides away as his face brightens. "Is that the criminal side? Is it freezing cold?" "All sides of Roon are the criminal side," Granta says dryly. "And And no, the whole planet is temperate. The cloak of the Sith keeps even the side away from the sun warm enough for plenty of life. Don't bother with a jacket. Okay, Jack says, and then he's gone, practically bolting for the door with all traces of sleep gone. Granta chuckles as he sinks back, glad that for the moment it's entirely easy to remember Jax's age. Not just a soldier. Not anymore, he thinks. Granta will make sure he has absolutely everything that Granta never did as a child, and that he never spends even one more day terrified of being decommissioned, killed at the whim of some overseer, obsessed with test scores and results. When he looks up, Hunty is watching him, careful, thoughtful. At Granta's raised brow, he shakes his head, rising to his feet, and says quietly, "I thought he was just a pawn when you landed. I didn't expect you to actually care." "He's my son," Granta says, as even as he can make it. The look Hunty shoots him is amused and rueful and bitter all at once. You'd be surprised how often that doesn't matter at all, Omega. He leaves while Granta is still trying to formulate a response, and he doesn't look back. End of chapter 12.